So we have been doing a series called My Pledge, and it has nothing to do with money, and it has everything to do with where we're taking off from our Pledge of Allegiance. And the Pledge of Allegiance, one nation under God, you know, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We know the pledge. But here's my question I want to start off with this morning is, what is a pledge? Why do we need a pledge anyway? What's a pledge? A commitment. I guess you got it. He seconds it. He says, yeah, ditto. Anybody else? Ideas? Why do we need a pledge? What's this whole pledge thing about? Clean the countertops and the pews, which is a good opportunity for me to segue into the work day on Saturday when we will use pledge to clean the pews. But that's a different pledge. That's a different pledge. And so the question becomes, why do we need a pledge? And there are a lot of different pledges, right? I've taken pledges to pay money every month to Planet Fitness. Yeah, how's that working out? Yeah, and I once talked to somebody who said the secret to those places is that they get thousands of people who sign up at like 10 bucks a month, but only 8% of the people use them, except for like the first week after New Year's. I remember one time I had a pledge to a gym, and it was down in southern Maine. It was a YMCA, actually, pledge to this fitness thing, and it cost $180 per session. That's a lot, right? Well, really, it cost $360 a year, but I only went twice, so that came down to $180 a session. If somebody had told me in making that pledge, yeah, you're not going to do that, I probably wouldn't have made that pledge. But we've been looking at this pledge, and the definition says that a pledge is a solemn promise or undertaking. Like, for example, the conference ended with a joint pledge to limit pollution. So it's a pledge, it's a commitment of something that we're going to do rather than a statement of what is. Okay, so last week we explored a little bit of the term under God, and we looked and we saw that our Pledge of Allegiance got its earliest forms in 1856. Well, the Civil War ended in 1865. So 9 years later, after a civil war, which has been the most expensive in terms of human life of any war that we've had, 9 years later, a pledge is an effort to do something. What was that an effort to do? Unite the country. One nation. We saw last week that it had things in it. One nation, one language, one, and they're all looking at saying, we're coming back together now. This is part of our hope to bring the country back together. So do you think that in 1865, when the first one came about, that everybody was like, yes, that's what I want to be about? No. The losing side, the South, was not all that excited about a pledge. So even though in this pledge we talk about being indivisible, we already aren't indivisible. We're divided. So it's not a statement of fact. It's a statement of, it's a pledge of commitment that we aspire to. It was a goal to unite our country. And last week, a lot of you were surprised to find out that the words under God weren't even in the pledge until June 14th of 1954. Wasn't even added until then. But a lot of our controversy today is, well, they just don't want to say the Pledge of Allegiance in schools because it says under God. We learned last week that 1940 and 1943, long before under God was added to the pledge, there was the first challenge that said, we don't want our children forced to say the pledge. Wait a minute, it didn't even have any under God in there. So in 1940, the Supreme Court said, yes, we can force our children in schools to say the pledge without even any under God, nothing religious in there. 1943, that decision was overturned by the Supreme Court, and they said, nope, we can't force people to say the pledge. Again, had nothing to do with under God. So people have been fighting about the pledge since it started. That's the point. So when it was added, we had 90 years of no under God, and now we've had 68 years with under God in the pledge. And it was 1954 added in the midst of what was happening in our country. Remember? Todd knew. He's the trivia expert. The Red Scare, right? It happened at the point when our leadership was saying, and saying, if you don't agree with this, you're a communist, and they're a communist over there. And people in the country were even looking for neighbors who were potentially hidden communists. Well, communists are a godless society, right? There's no God, no anything. So we're going to add it to our pledge. So it was a fear-based addition. A fear-based addition. I'm not saying whether it's good or bad or anything. I just think it's helpful to kind of know some of that history. But here's the question. Has our country ever truly been undivided? Have we ever been united? Let's go back. 1776. Here's your History Channel lesson for today. This was what I was worried about last week, where we got into the History Channel stuff, and I was afraid I was going to lose a bunch of you. But actually, afterwards, you went, wow, I really like that. So all the history geeks were thrilled last week. All right, so we're going to feed that again a little bit this week. 1776, there's a major conflict going on. What was it? Yeah, we're fighting. We're going to fight for independence, the colonialist versus the loyalist. Do you know that a lot of the settlers here weren't all excited about going to war with England? It wasn't like a united thing. But most of the people were, like they are in every war, just going, I'm just trying to feed my family, live my life, hope my kids grow up to be decent people. That's all I want to do. And that's still the case. 1789. So we've got our Declaration of Independence and everything's going great. Woohoo! We're doing this. 1789. Do you know what was born? Political parties! Political parties are born. And we know, do you guys realize the word politics? It's a combination of two words from the Greek meaning poly, many, and ticks, blood-sucking insects. Politics was started with the Federalist Party, led by Alexander Hamilton. His big thing was a strong central government. Well, there's a bunch of people who disagreed with that. And at that point, 1792, 3 years later, the Democratic Republican Party, which was called the Republican Party, believed in strong state rights, human rights, things like that. It's funny because you can look back and go, yeah, but it was the Republican Party that started this way back here. Well, our parties have totally flipped. The Federalists were the ones who were the rich, elite, money, and the Republican were the fighting for man's right, man's man, yeah, all of that stuff, human rights. Because we saw some of that come about, right, in the Civil War. Was the country united then? No. It was brother against brother. Okay, here's a trivia question. Todd's ears perk up. In the late 1800s, something happened. Something happened that affected and resulted in a wave of immigration into our country. There was something developed and invented that suddenly was bringing people from Italy, Hungary, Poland, Greece. Todd? What? Steam engines! The steamships! Man, if you ever want to grab drinks and a burger and win a trivia tournament, you go with these guys. The steamships were invented and became commonplace. So suddenly, our country is fighting about immigration. But the immigration is from Italy, Hungary, Poland, it's all European, it's Greece. And people are not excited about that. In 1819, Congress enacted the Steerage Act, which limited overcrowding on those ships. Said you can't just pack them to the rims anymore. We have to have a list of who's on those ships. Okay. In 1882, we went a little further and had something enacted called the Chinese Exclusion Act, used to restrict the number of Chinese people who could come to our country because they were taking our jobs. That was the rationale then, but they had to carry paper. 1882, you guys. We're still fighting about it. We're still fighting about it. Hey, you know, there was something in the 1920s that came to be, changed the course of America. Country was pretty divided about it. The movie Mary Poppins features it. Anybody know? Not prohibition. You ladies, are you for or against women's suffrage? Right! It's funny because I saw on late night TV one time, one of those asking people on the street, are you for or against women's suffrage? 9 out of 10 people said, oh, I'm against it, needs to stop. They had no idea that it meant the women fighting for the right to vote, which came about in 1920. Country's very divided. A lot of division over that. That was a decades-long battle. Black men were given the vote 50 years before. Kind of ironic how we, in our whole political system, of all the thoughts and different things act. I was surprised to find that. So here, in 1963, something monumentous happened. On March 20 of 1963, there was a little boy born, and he was the answer to his parents' prayer. They had had two daughters and no son. And so Donald Westcott Linscott III came into the world as the golden boy, the one promised. My sister's 10 and 12 years older than me. I joke, that means I am now 59 years old. My wife turns 60 in May. I love that right now, for another few months, I can continue to work this joke. I say to her, well, you don't really understand because you're in your 60s. I'm in my 50s. You know, there's that generational gap. Well, anyway, so here I was born and I grew up. That was the year of a major assassination, if you remember. JFK was assassinated. I was born into that in 1968 when I was 5. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. So I've had 59 years of people debating, arguing, fighting. I don't know much or remember much about the Vietnam War except for the music of the Vietnam War. So I don't really remember a lot of it. So the Pledge of Allegiance, a country indivisible, which means you can't divide it, is a pledge of what we're trying to attain as a country. So it's not a statement of saying we are indivisible. You understand what I'm saying? Because we've always been divided. There will always be arguments. So my question this morning, philosophical, is division a human condition as a result of the fall? Say that again. Is division a human condition as a result of the fall? Read the book of Genesis. Any of us from dysfunctional family? Oh, yeah, I grew up in this. Read the book of Genesis. It's a whole account. You can't find anything but dysfunctional families in there. Dysfunctional families. Is conflict the result of the worship of self? Putting self above everything. My wants, my ideas, my needs. So where do we go if we've been talking about that as a church, and what does that have to do with us? Church united, followers of Christ united, indivisible, unity is a big deal. Oh, he's so cute. He's up here grinning at Brad. Like, squirrel, sorry. You have probably been in churches that have divided. You've seen ugly splits, seen weird stuff. I've seen people get mad about the color of carpet. I've seen people leave churches because they didn't like the decision that the majority made about flooring. We had a guy come in and visit, and I met him at the back door, and the church was full and everything had been a good morning, and I said, well, it's so good to have you here. And he said, what have you done to this place? I said, well, what do you mean? Great. He said, I can't even believe it. You got the Hootenanny band up here. And I'm the only one wearing a suit. I don't know. What happened? Where are we? I said, well, the church has grown again and people have come back. And, you know, it went through some hard times and, yeah, we're adjusting to the culture, but the gospel we preach is still the same. I said, I hope you'll give it another try. He said, yeah, I won't be back. I was like, oh, okay, have a great day. He didn't like our Hootenanny band. That's why I'm going to start calling you guys Ed and the Hootenannies. But I've seen people leave. I saw somebody get all upset at a church I was at, because the piano used to sit over here. And at one point, somebody decided, probably the piano moving committee, they decided to move it over here. Whew. What a big deal. People got mad. They yelled at each other. I'm like, what? So I heard the story of a pastor who wanted to move the piano. So what he did, every Sunday, he'd go in and pull it 6 inches. 6 inches. Next week, 6 more inches. Next week, 6 more inches. And gradually, it moved over there, and nobody noticed. They're like, oh, yeah. But you've probably been part of churches that have been dysfunctional. I know I have. And sometimes a church and people do things in the name of Christ that are very ugly and have nothing to do with Christ, that don't represent him at all. So this morning I wanted to ask, how do we as a church, as followers of Jesus, not get sucked in, chewed up, spit out by all the current distraction? How do we stay united, indivisible? You know that Jesus prayed for us about this? Somebody grab the Bibles. If you need a Bible, take one. It might even be different languages if you need one in a different language. But grab those Bibles. Somebody read out loud, nice loud voice, John 17,
verses 20 to 23 for us. Somebody look it up and read John 17, 20 through 23. All right, Chelsea. So Jesus prayed for us, because he's praying for the disciples. I'm praying not only for these disciples, but all who will believe as a result of their message. That's you. That's me. Jesus prayed for us. So I want to look at some things this morning that will help us to keep from getting ripped apart, chewed up, and keep things focused on the real Jesus of the Bible. Turn to Romans 12, verses 4 and 5. Romans 12, 4 and 5. The first thing we need to do is we need to realize that we're better together. We're stronger together, we're better together when we support each other. So, Romans 12, 4 and 5. Just as our bodies have many parts, and each part has a special function, so it is with Christ's body. We are many parts of one body, and we all belong to each other. We all belong to each other. I don't think we can significantly impact the world alone. I'll say that again. I don't think we can significantly impact the world alone. If Vicky was alone last night at Open Door Kitchen trying to make and serve 192 meals, no way. She might have done it once. She might have tried it a second time. But by the third time, she's like, this program is dead, right? That we don't have enough to maintain it. See, in 1 Corinthians, one of my favorite passages, it's when the it's kind of humorous because the writer is talking about the eye, you know, the head cannot say to the feet, I don't need you, and the eye can't say to the hand, I don't need you. I mean, I picture this cartoon or something with my body talking to itself, you know, and my body having an argument with each other. And we see that dysfunction actually in muscular disease, right? When a muscular disease takes over and makes that disease makes our muscles not function the way they're supposed to, or what it debilitates the whole body. It can rob speech, it can rob everything. So the body is to work together, but God has put the body together, giving greater honor to the parts that lacked it, so that there should be no division in the body. That means God really doesn't care where you put the piano. It's right. The color of carpet is not what we're about, you guys. Come on, let's keep perspective. No division in the body, but that its parts should have equal concern for each other. If one part suffers, every part suffers. If one part is honored, we all rejoice with it, every part. I never even knew what my liver did until it stopped doing it. Really? Seriously? What are you? You're like, I don't know. But now I know a whole lot about livers because I got a new one. But before that, I knew what my hands did because they're very visible. I knew what my feet did. I knew. The liver? No, it's just in there, hidden, but vital. Mouth, feet, brain, the heart to pump. And you are part of the body. You're part of the body. Your part is important. Now, here we have the problem, is that in churches, I mean, you get these folks up here smiling,
singing. They're very visible. They're great. We love them. We're like, whoa, I wish I could sing like Katie sings. I wish I could play the drums like Seth plays. I just wish those guys all have gifts. Or we look at the giant mouth that just stands up front and talks every week. And we go, that guy's the most important part. That guy. So what the Bible says. The Bible says that all the parts are equally important. I want to embarrass some parts this morning that they don't want to be recognized. They don't want them. They're like, I'm a liver. Leave me alone and let me do what I do. We have internet in this building. We had to get everything fixed and changed and all this stuff when the pandemic hit. So we got this guy in church who not only did he crawl around and wire up all our security cameras and everything to make us more secure, and he also pulled the Ethernet stuff and did all that. And now whenever I send him a text and go, hey, I'm checking out the church and I can't see it on my phone here to see what's happening in such and such a room, he then fixes it. He doesn't want you to know about that because he just does it. And I won't name him. I'll just tell you his initials are Bill Lampson. When I look and say every part is important, so people who are watching online this morning, it really has very little to do with me. I just stand up here and what I do every week, just talk. It's because Bill pulled all those wires and that little green light is on, and that's all I need to know about it. And that's all I know about it. You know that we have these people who work and volunteer and set up food for people, some of our immigrants who live in hotels. Imagine living in a hotel room with three of your children. They're living in the hotels. And they set up this table of food every week. And most of you don't know who they are. And they don't care that you know who they are. They are part of the body that makes us do the things that we do. Chelsea, Ashley, Shree, we've got others who have been instrumental in that. Heidi. We've got a guy named Jerry. He just makes sure everything is going the way it's supposed to go. You know, when you show up and the sidewalks are clear and everything else is not clear, that's Jerry. Jerry's back there, you know, sitting in the row with Sherry, and he's going, all right, stop talking about me now, Scott. Move on. People are looking at me now. Stop it. Because parts of the body doing the work of Christ are just as valuable as these parts, this part, everything else. We can go on and name all of it. Our nursery, our ODK, open door kitchen team, our Biff and the grilling team. And all I did was say, hey, what do you think about having a community cookout on this date? And Biff would go, yeah. And then I just showed up. And it got done. I love that. You see, we have all these things, and we are not the same. And that's the way God has designed it to work best. My wife will never get up here in front of you. Afton does the craft fair for us. Sets the whole thing together and does everything, puts it all together, and it's incredible. And we've supported the Westbrook Drug Liaison Program. We've supported Guatemala. We've supported things because of that craft fair that she does. But you'll very rarely hear her speak. You know, but she does all of that and, like, just puts it together. See, we're not the same. Unity is not uniformity.
Unity is not uniformity. You know, churches are not made to make clones. I remember a song some of you years back by Steve Taylor, "I Want to Be a Clone." Be a clone, kiss conviction goodnight. Cloneliness is next to godliness, right? And he talked about how I have to learn to talk, dress, do all the same things, all be exactly the same. And people complain and go, "Our pastor has a tattoo, so we're really cool." And another church down the road says, "Their pastor has a tattoo, so they're going to hell." It's like, why? Why are we so divided? How do we keep unity? We err on the side of being for, not against. Ephesians. I love what Paul is writing here. See that in the middle, Ephesians 4? Be patient with each other. Make allowance for each other's faults because of your love. Always be humble and gentle. See, it's the thing, a human condition of selfishness that says, me first, my needs first. We need to cut each other some slack, some slack. The third thing, that we need to commit ourselves to loving like Jesus loved, in the same way he loved. Remember, it's hard because Jesus said some things that are really tough. But if we keep the main thing, we keep united. When we start getting distracted by all the sub things, is when we start fighting. Keeping the main thing, Jesus said, love your enemies. Well, that's dumb. Bless those who curse you. Well, that's dumb, isn't it? By society's standards, no, that's dumb. But you have Jesus who's saying it. You have years later with Gandhi saying it. And people say, wow, I think Gandhi, you know, kind of, it wasn't copyrighted, so use some of the same themes. Every leader of peace has had a peaceful focus. A new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, just like I've loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know you are my disciples, if you love one another. You know, Jesus didn't say, a new command I give you, post daily rants and run down everybody who disagrees with you. A new command I give you, never ever put up with that guy. A new command I give you, register for this party and not that party, because this party's going to heaven and that party's going to hell. A new command I give you, no. He said, a new command I give you, love one another. Jesus didn't say be right, he said be loving. Look at Philippians 2, 1 through 5. Is there anything to this, is basically how it's starting off. Is there anything you find in this? Is there any encouragement for belonging to Christ, any comfort, any fellowship? Make me truly happy by agreeing wholeheartedly with each other. And do you think this means on everything? So we all have to have the same favorite color? And we all have to enjoy the same favorite meal of like Chris spaghetti with chili on top? No, it's not saying agree with everything wholeheartedly, meaning everything that this whole gospel is not about. In context, it's saying, be agreeing wholeheartedly that our focus is on the hope that Christ brings, the new life that Christ brings, the message of Christ crucified, risen, coming again. That's the gospel. Loving one another, working together with one mind in this purpose and purpose. Don't be selfish. Don't try to impress others. Be humble, thinking of others as better than yourselves. Thinking as others as better than yourselves? Wow, that's a hard one. Don't look out for your own interest, but take an interest in others. That's loving with the same attitude that Christ Jesus had. So this morning, as Our music team comes back up to close us. I want us to, my challenge is that we pledge allegiance first and foremost to the work of Christ, the message of Christ, and we commit to that as his ambassadors, that we pledge to remain under God, meaning not just under him like under the stars, but under his influence, and that we pledge to remain visible and indivisible. What does that mean? We will not be known for what we're against. We will be known for our love in this community. We will love like Jesus loved, active and visible. We will commit ourselves to loving one another, and we will remember and value that unity is not uniformity. See, we really just don't have time for all the political wars and divisions. We don't have time for Twitter fights. We don't have time for the Facebook wars. Our mission is too important to let any of that tear us apart. So as we come together as a church of Jesus followers, let's be about the things that Christ is about and have that be our focus.